All right, Erev Tov. We are learning Parashat Toldot. Let me share my screen. Okay. So here we are, and we're learning these little shtiklach that I like to send out, or the little Torah for your table. And I'm going to try to keep it quantitatively smaller this week. We've been trying to do too much, so I thought we'd do a little bit less. And we'll start actually chronologically. We'll start with the Abba Banel, the Yitzhak Dan Abba Banel, 13th century Rishon. And he has a couple of interesting comments that I wanted to look at. Number one, at the beginning of the parasha, Tomim Bivitna. So it says that Rivka was finishing her days of being pregnant. She was about to have children, babies. And the Torah specifies that there's Tomim Bivitna. Now, what does Tomim mean?
Let's say it says twins, doesn't it?
It should be twins, right? Except there's one problem. If you want to say twins, how do you say twins in Hebrew?
No, what's the word?
Teomim, with an aleph. Teomim, that's how you say it, not tomim. Is the Torah just saving ink on the aleph? So the Rabbanan says, Zachar katuv she'im ayod shnei bebet. And even though there's two in her belly, she didn't have a miscarriage, even though there was this fighting. You would think, there was fighting between the babies. It's going to cause some problem. And not only that, she finished her period, her the period of pregnancy. And then when she actually had the babies, it turned out that the nevuah that she received when she was pregnant was true. And she had two children in there. She had babies that were twins. And then Abba Banel says, the Ibn Ezra waves it away. He just says, yeah, it's like tomim. It's just missing an aleph. Kamo im lo sariticha latov, fine. Aval ra'ui, the Rabbanan says, latetam lamenichtibu tomim velo teomim. Why is it without the aleph? V'yir'e sh'ayaz el hodiyah sh'ayu shnei ha'ubarim ahem tomim utmimim b'maseihem. Zelitzidko v'zelirish'o. If you take the aleph out, then the word tomim is a lot like tamim. Tamim is perfect or mushlam or complete. And the Rabbanah suggests that we use it in the normal way, which is tamim for tzidkut, but also in the opposite way, tamim berishut, meaning these two babies are pristine in their nature. This one is all the way to the right. This one's all the way to the left. This one is all the way tamim b'tzidko, and that one is all the way tamim b'risho. Ki kol echad haya b'ktzei ha'haflaga, v'lazeh k'ram tomim milashon tmimut v'hashlama b'inyanehem. In other words, the Torah is straddling the line between te'omim and tamim in order to teach us that they're twins, but they're twins and also in the sense that they are completely extreme in their nature. This one in that side and that one in that side. Interesting comment by the Abba Banel. Here's another one. The Abba Banel is bothered by the same question that bothers almost every Perush when reading the Chumash this week. There are lots of questions that one could ask about the story of Yaakov tricking his father into giving him the bracha of Esav. There's plenty of questions. One particular question is, no, Hashem is overseeing this. Hashem is overseeing this, and Rivka insists that this is what Hashem wants. Rivka tells Yaakov, I want you to go in there and get the bracha. And by the way, don't tell him who you are. Don't tell him that you shouldn't be giving the bracha to Esav because he's not a good guy, he's a bad guy. Just go in there and swindle out that bracha. So the Abba Banel says, why did it have to happen this way? Hinei lo ratza HaKadosh Baruch Hu shivarech Yitzhak et Yaakov bal korcho ulegaresh et Esav asher ahav mibirchato. Hashem did not want Rivka to tell Yitzchak that, oh, it has to be given to Yaakov. And then Yitzchak will be forced to give this bracha to Yaakov and to kick Esav out of the house, basically. Because it turns out that Esav is not worthy of anything. Hashem didn't want that. You know why? Because then Yitzchak would be sad. And when he would give the bracha to Yaakov in such a fashion, it wouldn't come out well. It would be mitoch atzvut. He would have no nevuah, because nevuah does not happen when a person is sad. So the only way to successfully do this is to convince Yitzchak that he's actually blessing Esav. And then what will happen? How will he feel? He'll feel happy. He'll feel happy, and then he'll be able to give a proper bracha. That's the first thing that the Eber Benalev suggests. The second, he says, Shesivev ze amevi eitzot nerachok latet eva ben shnei ha'achim ha'ele. Deshiye Esav shevet apo umateza amo shel kadosh baruch hu liyaser bo et Yisrael k'sheichatu. Rabbi Benalev suggests another reason, definitely one that was relevant for him as he was kicked out of Christian Spain. Basically, he says that Hashem arranged for this to happen so that Esav would have tremendous animosity towards Yaakov, because he wanted Esav to be the eternal enemy of Yaakov, of Bnei Israel, so that there would always be this representative of God in the world to punish Bnei Israel when they're acting not nicely. The descendants of Esav are there to be the Shevet Apo, the whacking stick that Hashem uses in order to keep us in line. So you have these two answers that Rabbi Benalev gives. One, that he wanted Yitzchak to give the bracha mitoch simcha. And number two, that he wanted Esav to be angry so that he would always be angry, so he could use that anger. Pretty radical answers.
Hmm.
Okay, let's take a look at... Yeah, go ahead, Barbara.
Is that thing about Esav sonetted at Yaakov, that sort of eternal law, is that...
Yeah, it sounds like it's on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's another one, going again, chronological order, Or Chaim, Rav Chaim ibn Attar. So he says, in the words, B'no HaGadol, the fact that Esav is referred to as the older son, in the middle over there. Why did Yitzchak not call Yaakov? Doesn't he know that he's the Bechor at this point? Because Esav sold the Bechorah. So one obvious answer is maybe Yitzchak was never told about that transaction. Why did Yitzchak want to give the bracha to Esav? Didn't he know that there was something wrong with Esav? So the rabbi actually referenced this question in his Dvar Torah in the email that was sent out today. And he quoted the Sfat Emet for this answer. But the Or HaChaim said it first. It says, Ki chashav shebamtzaut habrachot yitapech lemidat hatov v'yitiv drachav. Ki hatzadikim yichavu ba'asot b'nehem resha. V'yamishtadal imo leitiv. Yitzchak was hoping that this bracha would help put Esav back on the path of the righteous, because it bothered him. And so he was hoping to do a little bit of kiruv, a little bit of support. And in fact, you know what? The Or HaChaim says something almost frightening. He says, you know what? Maybe it would have worked. Who knows? Maybe it would have worked. But in a different context, when Esav and Yaakov meet in the beginning of Parshat Vayishlach, the Midrash says that Dina is not overtly present. She's not listed, because Yaakov had hidden her away, because he didn't want Esav to go after Dina and to try to seduce her, to marry her, etc., etc. And the Midrash says that Yaakov was punished for that, because maybe if Esav had married Dina, maybe he would have come back to the side of the light. Maybe that would have worked out. So we see that there is always a chance that Esav could have been saved. Once by Yitzchak, and then again by Yaakov. It's an amazing counterfactual question. What would have happened if Yaakov had not taken the bracha? Would Esav have changed? Fascinating to think about.
Well, the word had a few more implications than that. I mean,
certainly.
You know, never mind Esav changing, but I mean, what would have happened to Yaakov? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll see later if we have time. The Sfas Emes has a whole idea of what Yaakov, what his plan was, and what the role of what Yitzchak's plan was, and what the role of Yaakov and Esav was in that plan. We'll see that later. Shema b'koli, perish agam sheyesh b'dvarim eilu kegneva dat. In other words, Rivka told Yaakov to go and lie, And she says, even though it sounds like we're doing something asur, we're deceiving Yitzchak. Why you should still listen to me. Now here, let me pause for a second. Here's something that should bother us. It always bothered me. Yaakov is being told by his mother to go in and essentially lie to Yitzchak. Now, aside from the fact that this is causing Yaakov to basically choose between his mother and his father, which is obviously not something that's easy, but beyond that, Rivka is asking him to do something that is ostensibly asur in any other context, right? He's supposed to lie and to his father, not of all people. Why didn't anybody know what my question is going to be? Why didn't Yaakov just turn around and say to Rivka, I'm sorry, I can't do that. We know that according to the halakha, if a father or a mother asks a child to do something that's asur, according to the Torah, what is the response of the child supposed to be? No, I can't do that. We learned this from the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim, when the Torah juxtaposes Shmirat Shabbat with Kibbutz Avayim. And Rashi says, we learn from there that if a father tells a son to be Mechalel Shabbat, the son says no. So why didn't Yaakov turn around and say to Rivka, no, I'm not going to do it? What do you think? He can't hide behind Kibbutz Avayim. So the Or HaChaim answers. He says, when she says Shema B'Koli, he says Milvad Chiyuv Mitzvat Kibbutz Avayim. She mitzvah to say Gam Hi Nevi'ah. Aside from the Kibbutz Avayim, she's also a Nevi'ah. She's a prophetess. Uchtiv B'Divrei Emet Nevi'ah Emet Elav Tishma'un Laze Amra Shema B'Koli. There's a mitzvah to listen to a Navi. For Katav Nushit Tadek Navi B'Amor Lavor Al Mitzvah Mi Mitzvot Torah Shel Pisha. The fact is that another halacha in the Torah is that if a Navi tells you to transgress one of the mitzvot of the Torah for right now, temporarily, meaning not to remove it from the Torah, but to simply say, right now, I want you to barbecue on Shabbos. This Shabbos we're taking off for barbecuing. What's the answer supposed to be? Yes, we will do that. We will do that. A Navi is allowed to tell you to transgress a mitzvah temporarily. So what Rivka was saying to Yaakov was, it's not for me that you're doing this. I got a nevuah that this is the right thing to do. And if that's the case, then Yaakov has to listen to Rivka. That answers that question. Okay. Now we see the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar talks about Vayikra'u Shmo Esav. They called him Esav. Here's the question. You ready? Why is Yaakov called Yaakov? Anybody know? Why is Yaakov called Yaakov?
Because of the heel. He held on to his heel.
He was grabbing Esav's heel. Good. We know that. Esav later on is called Edom, right? Why is that? Why is he called Edom?
He was a gingy.
No. That's not what the Torah says. Why was he called Edom later on?
Was he redhead? Was he red? No.
Well, we don't know what color his hair was. We don't know. Because the Torah says that he asked for that red stuff. That's why he's called Edom. So now I have a different question. Why is Esav called Esav? Why did his parents name him Esav? So the Torah never tells us. But Rashi comments, I believe, Rashi says, well, the word Esav sounds a lot like asa, to do, right? Or asui. If you just add a yud at the end of Esav, then you get asui. What's asui? It means done, finished. Esav was born finished. He was already, he had signs of maturity, physical maturity. When he was born, he had hair, his skin was red, it was very healthy looking. He was born that way. And that's how the Kli Yakar starts. Shina asa v'nigmar b'sa'aro. He had so much hair, he looked like he was, adultish. Zehu siman shi'ahu olam hazeh chelko v'gorelo. And ultimately, that was a sign that this world is going to be his place. His main place is this world. V'lo yelo or chelik v'olam hazeh. He won't have a place in the eternal world. G'havdel ben k'niyat shnei minei shnei mot. Elohu zeh. When a person is born, he uses kelim gashmiyim for kol chameshet chushim poalim pulatam. He has all five physical senses. And he immediately has a desire towards all the things in this world. A person does not use his kochot sichliim, his mental energies, when he's born, or for that matter, for months and years afterwards. When a person is born, he's a very physical creature. Ki adam ayer pera yivaled, we're wild. Ach bevo bayamim yifkach en sichlo viknez ashlimut memula mat mat. As you get older, you acquire this mental, these mental faculties. Lufiza, mashinolad Esav nigmar besaro. The fact that Esav was born finished with his hair. Zemel feit ashakol ikar tashmisha vihu bekleya chomer. Basically, the hair was a sign that this is it for him. He is completely going to be ensconced in this world. He's not going to be making use of any of the faculties that are going to bring him to the next world. And that is represented by the name Esav. We might get back to that later. I'm not sure. On the other hand, Yaakov gets his name from Viado Ochazet Ba'akev Esav. He was holding on to the heel of Esav. Zayasiman Shalakid Yivaze. Okay, so hold on. What does that mean? That means that he's holding on to the heel of Esav, right? What are we supposed to get from that? Like, what's the imagery of Yaakov holding on to the heel of Esav? What does it conjure up in your mind?
You could drash that he needed Esav's physical strength and, you know, physicality so that he could survive in his more spiritual world, something like that.
So you're saying he's grabbing onto Esav's heel because he needs Esav's strength. Are you specifically, do you see a connection to the heel in that imagery, or it could have been any part of Esav's body?
Well, the heel isn't the heel the most materialistic, you know, the lowest part of the body.
Okay. So he's holding on to the lowest part of Esav's body. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I know that I always thought of it as he's like chasing after Esav. He's trying to catch him. That's how I always thought of it. Like, you know, the person's running ahead of you, you grab them by the part that's closest to you, which is going to be the heel, because they're kicking, they're running away. He's like, you know, as Esav's leaving, he's trying to hold on. It's almost like, you know, he's holding on, trying to hold him back. That's how I always thought of it. The Kli Yakar says something that's different. This is a siman shelatid yivaze Esav et habechora kedavar shadam dash ba'akevav uvaze oto. He says that the word akev over here doesn't really refer to, or at least metaphorically, doesn't refer to the heel of Esav. Not physically and not even spiritually. What it is Esav's akev is the spot that he uses to trample on something. Yeah? When something is unimportant, what do? You step on it. A dash ba'akevav. You step on it and you squash it. What was Esav squashing? What did he squash? The bechora. That's what he was mevazeh the bechora. That's the only thing that the Torah says about him that was bad. It says he was mevazeh the bechora. And on exactly that thing that he would squash, that's what Yaakov was grabbing. That which Esav steps on with his heel, that's what Yaakov is grabbing for. Mm-hmm. Also, from Parshat Ekev, all the little mitzvot that people step on, all the small things that we trample on, we don't think are important. That's what Yaakov was. Yochez b'hem Yaakov v'yikaymen. This is from Parashat Ekev. L'shon akev m'shamesh gam l'shon akva u'mirma. The other thing is that later on, Esav uses the shoresh ayin kuf vet at the end of the parasha. He says v'yakven yizah pa'mayim. He tricked me twice. Akev could also mean to trick. Lomar lecha she'Yaakov tafas alav mitzad Heyot Esav Ramay Vitzayad V'chom Asav Bakval V'yomah. He basically borrowed Esav's quality of being a trickster. Esav is described as Tzayid Befiv, as a person who traps people with his mouth. Yaakov grabbed that. He grabbed that quality. That's the other thing that the Kli Yaakov points out. Okay. Chatam Sofer, moving up. It says,
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Baruch.
But when it comes to twins, who's conceived first? The second baby or the first baby?
Are you saying
the one that general, comes out last or the one that came out first? That's a question too for you.
I mean, biologically, I'm not sure that there's a connection, but I know the Midrash says that Yaakov was conceived first and Esav was born first.
So that could be the reason he was grabbing the heels. He said, hey, I was here first.
Yeah, maybe. I think that's what the Midrash says. The Chatam Sofer says, Vayikrash Moisav, this is the same Rashi I quoted before, Pirish Rashi, Adam Nigmar Besaro. He's finished. This makes sense when he's a baby, but when he gets older, everybody forgets that he was hairy, right? Because you're supposed to be hairy when you get older, right? You're not going to look at somebody who's hairy when they're older and say, wow, let's call him Esav because he's asui, he's finished. So therefore, what happened? The Chatam Sofer, okay, so here, let me say the following. Getting back to the story of Esav and Yaakov and Yitzchak, stealing the Bechorah, the Mefarshim all struggle with the obvious difficulty of dealing with Yaakov's, you know, deceitfulness towards his father, whether it was something he wanted to do or whether it was something he was forced to do. There are three main approaches to dealing with it amongst the Mefarshim. One approach, this is the approach of Rashi, and the Chatam Sofer is connecting to this Rashi, is to basically say, Yaakov didn't lie. It's to kind of downplay any dishonesty that Yaakov might have said. So that's why Rashi says, he says, Anochi Esav Bechorcha. Rashi says, it's all a matter of where you put the comma. If you put the comma after the word Anochi, then all Yaakov said was, I am. Esav is your Bechor. So that erases the lie. Okay, that's what Rashi says. The other option is to say, no, Yaakov lied, and it was the right thing to do at the time because he had to do it. This is the approach of the Hamak Davar and the Ibn Ezra. And maybe we'll see. Then there's a third approach. The third approach is a radical approach. We're not going to see inside. I think Rav Dessler is one of the only ones who says it, who basically says, it's kind of a postmodern approach that says there's no lie and there's no, put it this way, truth and fact are not the same thing. Since it worked out in the right way, it wasn't really a lie. I guess it fits better into the first approach, but it should be understood separately. So the two main approaches are either to say that Yaakov lied, but it was okay, or to try to remove the lie from Yaakov. So the Chatam Sofer over here is going in the vein of Rashi and saying, all Yaakov was saying is that I am also complete like Esav is complete. Anochi Esav Bechorcha. I am Esav because I'm finished. I'm also grown now. And I'm the Bechor because I bought the Bechorah. It's not a problem. So that's what the Chatam Sofer suggests over here. Another comment by the Chatam Sofer to explain basically the plan of Yitzchak. The Midrash says that Yaakov and Esav chalku b'neim olam azev olam haba. Yaakov and Esav had prepared a deal, or they were supposed to prepare a deal. Esav was going to be in charge of olam azeh, and Yaakov was going to be in charge of olam haba. Yaakov lakach olam haba ve'esav olam azeh v'zev shrei atam Yitzchak shebikesh levarach Yitzchak v'rchad olam azeh. If you look at the brachot that Yaakov stole, they're all brachot of olam azeh. These were the brachot that Yitzchak had prepared for Esav because that was Esav's realm. Pashtut omnam be'emet chalukah shayach im Esav haya adam kasher. The thing is, Yaakov concluded that this deal that they made between them, it was only good as long as Esav was going to be an Adam Kasher, b'miktzat at least. They were going to basically split it. It was like a Yisachar Zbulun. They split both. Since Esav does not deserve anything in Olam Haba because he was a Rasha, Yaakov said, okay, so you don't get Olam Haba either. And that was why Yaakov did what he did. Okay, let's jump ahead. Let's see what's important to do here. Why don't we skip this? Okay, here. Oh, I like this. Okay, this is cool to know. This is a Malbim of Meir Levush. Also, I saw this in the Ketav HaKabbalah a few weeks ago, the same idea. They lived around the same time, so maybe this idea was floating around. It's an interesting thing that you don't find that the Mefarshim explain this. I'm beating around the bush. What's the difference between Ani and Anochi? Anybody ever wonder that? Sometimes The Torah uses the word Ani, and sometimes the Torah uses the word Anochi. They both mean I, right? What's the difference between them? Anybody have a suggestion? Has this bothered anybody ever?
Yeah.
What's the difference between Ani and Anochi?
I thought Anochi maybe is more emphatic.
Emphatic. Okay.
Yeah.
I always thought that the difference was that Anochi was fancier. Like if you were feeling fancy, you'd said Anochi. Like the royal we or something like that. That's what I thought. But it doesn't work so well because a lot of people say Anochi. That maybe, you know, we don't want to say Anochi, and it doesn't really work out that way. So I saw both in the Ketav HaKabbalah and the Malbim, it makes a great distinction. It would be interesting to check each and every one. They gave a bunch of examples where it worked beautifully. The claim is this. The Malbim says, Yesh hevdel bein ani uvein anochi. Shekol makom shiomar anochi, vutzelomar anochi be'atzmi vudiyuk al atzmuto shel hamedaber. What he's saying, and I'll translate, anytime you see the word Anochi, it's I to the exclusion of anybody else. It's like if I say the sentence, I was sitting, yes? So if I emphasize the I, say, I was sitting, then what do I mean?
Yeah, it wasn't anyone else.
Exactly. It means, oh, you thought other people were sitting? No. I was the one who was sitting. The focus is not on the sitting part. The focus is on the I and not anybody else. On the other hand, if I say, I was sitting, then what am I trying to do?
You're emphasizing what you were doing.
Yeah. I'm saying I was sitting and not standing.
Mm.
So in English, we do that with the emphasis of the word. You say, I was sitting, or I was sitting. In Hebrew, apparently, you distinguish by saying Ani or Anochi. If you say Anochi, then it means I and no other. I'm the one who does this thing. If you say Ani, that it means I'm doing it, but what am I doing? I'm doing this and not anything else. So, for example, Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Tziticha Mi'aretz Mitzrayim. Right? What's the focus there?
It's Hashem and nobody else who took us out of Egypt.
I'm the one who took you out of Mitzrayim. Nobody else. It's not focusing on the fact that I took you out of Mitzrayim. No. I'm the one who did it. Okay?
My idea of emphatic wasn't that far away.
Right. Absolutely. So therefore, he says over here, when Yaakov says Anochi, what he's saying is, Esav lo ala b'livo ledayek. And by the way, that's one of the places. When Yaakov comes in, he says, Anochi, Esav b'chorcha. When Esav comes in, he says, Ani. Why? Because Yaakov is trying to convey that it's that he's Esav. Like, it's important to Yaakov to emphasize that he is Esav, because that's what's at issue, right? Whether he is or is not Esav. But when Esav comes in, he just says, Ani. Why? Because he's like, who else would I be? I'm doing this. He doesn't need to emphasize that he himself is Esav as opposed to anybody else. He doesn't have anything at stake. If you look at all the Ani and Anochis in the Torah, you'll find that at least most of them, the ones that I checked and the ones that the Ketav Kabbalah and the Malbim point out, they all fit this pattern beautifully. And it's a nice way of appreciating another nuance in the text. Okay. Time is in. Okay, why don't we jump ahead? Okay, the Kedushat Levi. Let's do this one. Oh, yes. Okay, the Kedushat Levi. Remember the question we asked before? The Orach Chaim wondered, why is it that, no, the Barbanel, wondered, why is it that Yitzchak had to be in the dark? Why did Yitzchak have to be in the dark for this bracha? Why couldn't anybody tell him? Why didn't Hashem arrange for Yitzchak to know? So the Barbanel gave his two answers before. The Kedushat Levi gives a very different answer. This is a Hasidish answer based on the Avivah.
Sorry, he says. Sorry, I didn't get the question.
Why did Yitzchak have to be kept in the dark? Why couldn't anybody just tell him that Yaakov deserves the bracha, that Esav is the wrong guy?
Mm-hmm.
So the Abarbanel gave two answers. One answer was that Hashem wanted the animosity between Esav and Yaakov. The other answer was that if Yitzchak had been told, he would have been sad. And then he wouldn't have been able to give the bracha properly. The Kedushat Levi uses a principle given by the Arizal. The Arizal says, "Eight Asher Shalat Adam be'Adam l'ra'lo shekadosh baruch hu b'shirotzel liten neshama kedusha le'olam atachton tarich liten mikodem el makom tum'ah." Whenever the Arizal says, whenever Hashem wants to put something kadosh into the world, he has to give the tum'ah its chelek first. She'im iten techef b'zeh olam azay midat adin chat v'shalom akev. If Hashem puts in the Kedusha first, then the Midat HaDin will get upset, and it might complain. So what do? You feed the beast first, and then it leaves you alone. So you feed the Tumah first, and then the Kedusha is left alone. He says, by the way, he quotes the Ramban for this. Anybody know which Ramban? Ramban doesn't say this anyway. But there is something that he says. I'll give you a hint. It has to do with Yom Kippur. Anybody want to try to guess where the Ramban says something like this about Yom Kippur?
It's the Seir La'Azazel.
Exactly, Martin. Thank you. The Seir La'Azazel, the Ramban says, very controversially, that the idea of the Seir La'Azazel, it's essential. Okay, I don't even want to say essentially, but it is, in some small way, a gift being given to the... the Yetzirah or the Sar of Esav, basically, being given to evil forces in order to placate them and leave us alone on Yom Kippur. That's what the Ramban says. Ayin Sham. It's a complicated topic, but Ayin Sham. So it's something similar over here. What's he going to say? He's going to say that if Yitzchak had known what he was doing, he was giving the bracha directly to Yaakov, then that would have been so powerful that the Midat HaDin would have tried to stop it. But because Yitzchak thought he was giving the bracha to Esav, and then at the last second there was a switcheroo, this subverted escaped the Midat HaDin. He says, what are other examples of this? Abram was born to Terach, who was literally an idol shop owner. Nobody saw Avram coming, right? Nobody sees it coming that the son of an idol shop owner becomes the first monotheist or the greatest monotheist. Can't be. Or David also, by the way. David comes ultimately... You know what David's backstory, his yichus is? Somebody tell me about David's yichus. Who are his grandparents and great-grandparents going back and back and back?
Ruth and then wasn't it Peretz?
Ruth and Boaz, right? Ruth comes from ultimately from Lot, and his daughters, right? Boaz comes from Yehuda and Tamar, from Peretz, like Barbara is saying, yeah? So if Yehuda and Tamar, a man and his daughter-in-law, you have Lot and his daughters, that's where David comes from. Nobody sees David coming. That's the plan. The plan is for nobody to see them coming. So that's why he says, "Bishvil kach lo ratza Yitzchak mevarechet Yaakov techef kedei shemidat adin yezbor shabracha ya'alav." Yitzchak's own plan was that he would give first the bracha to Esav and then to Yaakov. Lo yikatri chas v'shalom v'yakev bracha l'fichach ratza mitchil levarechet Esav, aval be'emet yikar bracha u'shor al Yaakov. It's almost like Hashem swooped in and made the plan even better. He even when he was trying to give it to Esav, he gave it to Yaakov. Excuse me. Okay, so that was another idea. Oh, I put an exclamation point over here because I thought this was really wild. You guys are not going to like this one, okay? I'm not even sure I should record it. Should we do it? I piqued your interest. The Sfat Emet, okay? The Sfat Emet. Inyan Yaakov. The idea that Yaakov took the brachas, yeah? I told you before, some of the Mefarshim will say that it wasn't, there were no lies. And then some of the Mefarshim will say there were lies, but it was worth it. They're supposed to do it anyways. The Sfas Emes goes in that second answer, but he takes it to the absolute max. He puts on the afterburners. Yesh l'lmon mizeh, ki kedei l'asig ha'emet be'emet, rishain l'asot al yedei arma. Sometimes in order to get the truth, sometimes you have to do it through some trickery. You have to be wise or tricky with your fear. You should use all kinds of tricks and underhanded activities in order to get to truth. Deceit to get to truth. Kevan sheikar hatzon lavo be'emet eino bichlal sheker. V'adrav is a tikkun sheker. This is what Rav Dessler is based on. Basically, he says it's a redemption of sheker. When you get to the truth, once you reach the end, you not only justify the means, you redeem it. You redeem them. Kedematzino achata v'ashuv ein maspikin v'atam shalidei atshuva achata. Once you get to the truth, it fixes the sheker. Listen, we're in this world. The world is called a world of sheker. Hashem wanted this to happen. He wanted to get to the emet through the sheker. That's what the svasem is. This is a wild svasem. I was hishtomamti. My jaw dropped when I saw this Sfas Emes. You won't find a lot of Mefarshim saying things like this. Okay.
Maybe it's got to do with the whole idea of the mixture, you know, the world, this world's a...
Yeah, well, he says it's not only a mixture, it's more on the side of Sheker.
Yeah.
It's a very postmodern idea, I think. Over here is what I was telling you before, but we already saw in the Chatam Sofer, the idea that Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba were being split between Esav and Yaakov. Okay. And this is the Sfat Emet that the rabbi was referencing in his Dvar Torah. Take a look. It just says in very short piece. Sana Kelecha. Yitzchak tells Esav to grab his bow and arrow and to go hunting to get the food for him. And he says, Yesh lomar ki Yitzchak avinu yada ma'asei Esav. He really knew the truth about Esav. Ach ratza l'hashivo b'tshuva. He wanted to cause him to do tshuva. And that's why you have the word v'ata at the beginning of this. Right? One of my favorite ideas. Chazal say, v'ata ein v'ata ela lashon tshuva. Whenever you see the word now, Ata with an ayin in the Torah, it is always connected to tshuva. Like now, things change. You do tshuva. Ve'im, he also said what we saw before. Im haya nigmar kein, haya malek kol klei hatzayed v'Hashem v'yatikon hashalem. If Esav had been allowed to finish what he was doing, is the possibility that he would have done total tshuva. Yitzchak wanted Esav to get all the way to the bottom, to hit rock bottom, so that when he came back up, he would redeem all of it. But he didn't get to do this. Because it could be that Esav was actually thinking about tshuva. That's why Rosh Hashanah Esav Munach b'Marat HaMachpelah, because his tshuva is still stuck where? In his head only. That's why his head is buried in Marat HaMachpelah. Okay, I think maybe we'll do one last thing. The Ketav HaKabbalah, the beginning of the parasha, it says that Yitzchak davened Lenochach Ishto. What does Lenochach mean?
In the presence of.
In the presence of, okay. What else? Sometimes it means in the same vein, like opposite, like across from. Lenochach, like you said, Karen, in the presence of, but like face to face, right? That's typically how it's translated. The Ketav HaKabbalah says some people translate it as ba'avur, for the sake of. He says, we don't have anything similar to this. So he says, he thinks, the Ketav HaKabbalah was very creative with his dikduk and with his understanding of how to translate words. So here's a little bit of that creativity. What's a vikuach?
Argument.
An argument, right? But he says, she'ikar horato itchazkut v'hitamtzut. He thinks that the essence of the kuach is not so much the back and forth argument, but rather the strength and the vigor that a person enters into a vikuach, into an argument. L'chazek dvarav l'fnei hashofet b'rayot. What do you do in a vikuach? You make your arguments, right? You say, this is why I think I'm right. Oh, hitchazkut l'hatzdik atzmo. Or this is why I am good, why I am correct. So that you can convince the other person. Kenyan vikuach disputation. Apparently, that's how you say that in German. Disputation, disputation. Vikar shor shor shtei otiot koach. The idea is here, koach, strength. And he says, okay. Mizei yaminat lenochach kan gam kenyan hit amtsut v'hit chazkut. Lenochach ishto means with the strength for his wife. Look, Yitzchak was ultimately a perfect korban. He knows that he is very, very tahor. That's why Abram had to send for a perfect bride. Yitzchak understood that he didn't need the tefillah. Who needed the tefillah? Rivka. She was begging him to pray for her to have children. V'yuturgam lenochach ishto. Ufim ha-shekatav ha-shmul ha-pappenheim. Nochach u-koach. Vanun hu-nun nif'al he-mantiv. Meaning, he's doing it to give her strength. Lenochach. To give her strength. So he says over here, what's going on is lenochach ishto. This is an elaboration of his point. He was praying for the strength of his wife to give birth. Lenochach ishto. Where else do you have koach as being connected to zera, to offspring, to children? It's right here. What is Rachel call Binyamin? Sorry, not Binyamin. Who is this? Kochi v'reshit oni is Yosef. Ruvain.
Binyamin.
No. Ruvain, Kochi v'reshit oni? Ruvain? Ruvain. Kochi.
Ruvain was last son.
That's right. This is Yaakov talking. This is Yaakov talking, right? This is Vayichi already. Lamentet. Memtet, rather. Yeah, that's Memtet. That's already Vayichi. This is when Yaakov is giving out brachot. Ruvain, kochi v'reishit oni. Kochi here doesn't just mean my strength. It means my strength because he's my offspring. So Rav Tav Kabbalah is suggesting that when he davens lenochach or lekoach, he's davening for her to have zera, to have children. This is the content of his tefillah. Right? Because that's not mentioned, that's how they talk about how this was they were davening opposite each other. In other words, it has a double meaning. Lenochach has a double meaning. One, like what Karen said, in the presence of each other. But two, koach. He was davening for her koach, for her to have offspring. That's the idea that he suggests over here. Okay. See, it's 10:04, so we're going to stop there. Shakok to everybody for hanging on, and thanks for joining me tonight. I think this was better. It was fewer perushim, but we got a lot done. Shakok.
Shakok.